That intro.
This open mind, intoxicated tongue, with this smooth talk, hot like the sun. Hitting the interviews, yeah, we doing the thing. Cause I guess keep it lit straight on the scene. Whether it's stories, hobbies, or just the job of life, best believe we spark it off and do it right. So stay tuned, cause we about to take flight. Take it a new height, yeah, this that podcast. Where we having a blast and getting it done. Cause you are now in the mix.
Welcome to the Sober Mind, Intoxicated Tongue podcast, or SMIT for short, a podcast where Ricardo interviews people from all walks of life, diverse people with different careers and different hobbies, all with fascinating stories to share. You can find all of our episodes wherever you listen to your podcasts, or go to smitpodcast.com to find our most recent episodes. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram at SMIT Podcast. And now, please welcome your host, Ricardo.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. On today's episode, we have a very special guest by the name of Brandon Woolley. He is a nutritional coach and personal trainer. He also has his own podcast. What is your podcast called?
Fire Within Nutrition and Fitness.
Thank you so much, Brandon, for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
All right. So before we get into your journey, your actual career itself, what led you to go into this?
It actually was the journey. I was 244 pounds and pre-diabetic and not happy with how I felt or my life or my confidence level. And my family history was riddled with heart disease and bipolar and all kinds of stuff. And I didn't want to go down that same path. And one day there was a picture of myself I saw on Facebook, and I couldn't believe I'd gotten as big as I'd gotten. Didn't look like me. And I decided to make a change. Lost 84 pounds. And because of the dramatic change that had in every aspect of my life, I decided I want to help others do the same.
Oh, wow.
And I left my teaching career and got my certification and started as a personal trainer.
So what at your heaviest, how much did you weigh?
244 pounds on a 5'10" frame, or 5'9", okay. 5'10".
Well, that's a little, I guess, comparative, if you want to compare it to a 6 point, or I'm 6'1", so it's not too bad, I guess. But yeah, I guess for a 5'10", it would be a little bit, really, a little bit heavier.
Yeah, I was a chunky monkey.
Yeah, so what would you say would be the hardest thing when you first began, like, on your health journey?
I think the hardest thing is finding consistency and having the discipline. I actually tied everything into my exercise at the time. I started out as a runner, which actually really bit me later on, and I don't recommend that as your primary means of weight loss.
So you say you wouldn't recommend it for the running for your average person?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend that being the first thing you start doing. And it doesn't even have to be a necessary part. In fact, I haven't really done any running in the last 8 years.
Oh, really?
Wow. But because I just made the decision that 6 days a week, no matter what, I do it. I also started learning more about nutrition and what I was eating and caloric intake and macros, which I focus less on that now and more on how food affects us hormonally. But just having some sort of discipline. And that reminds me of another question I get asked a lot. It's, what's the best type of exercise? And I used to be really dogmatic about it. Mm-hmm. Like, it has to be free weights, or it has to be this. But honestly, it's whatever you'll do consistently.
Right.
And whatever you'll do consistently that doesn't cause injury.
Right.
My running aspirations and getting into marathons and stuff, I ended up with a knee surgery,
oh, wow.
Shin splints, metatarsal fractures, piriformis issues. It actually caused degeneration in the low discs in my back.
Wow.
So now one hip is higher and tilted back, and the other one's lower and forward, which if I'm not careful about keeping corrective exercise in my regimen, can cause issues later on down the road.
Right.
So it really beat the crap out of me.
So how would you say, like, when you said every day I want at least six days a week I want to run a few miles, whatever, how consistent were you when you first started? Like, were you like religiously going to the gym or running outside?
Yeah, it was all outside. I never missed a day for over a year. Oh, wow. Never missed a day except for the one day I allotted off. So it was 6 days a week. And again, that wasn't smart. I almost got heat stroke. Wow. One day it was like 100 and something degree heat index. Shouldn't have ran that day unless I could have gotten up in the morning. I was hospitalized twice doing marathons. So again, it wasn't a healthy approach, but right. At least I found some kind of discipline I can stick to. I don't recommend that now. I know far more about biomechanics and nutrition and training now than back when I was a band director. You know, I was a music teacher back then. I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
Now, since then, I've worked with thousands of people, and the sustainable approach that doesn't lead you to the hospital and injured is making one small change a week and stacking those habits.
Right.
So I don't recommend the approach I personally took. I'm far more knowledgeable now, and that was not a good approach. I probably sustained, 14 unique injuries over the course of 3 years.
Wow.
Doing that. And in 8 years of strength training, I've only had one.
Wow.
And that was frozen shoulder from pushing a barbell overhead. And now I don't do barbell overhead press. I do dumbbells so that you can rotate your mm-hmm. wrist in a much more safer position that opens up the shoulder capsule.
Right.
So if strength training is done right, I think it can be a better modality for most and just as effective, because I've kept the weight off for 8 years without running.
Oh, wow. So how much weight did you lose within the first, was it 2 to 3 years that you were running? Or was it mostly off of that running that you lose the weight?
No, it was over a 3 year period. I lost 84 pounds.
Okay.
So it probably averages out to, 20, I'm not good with math, 25 to 27 pounds a year.
Okay.
So it was a pretty slow, gradual approach.
Yeah.
But it was a sustainable one that I've been able to keep off long term, because there was habit change following the running career.
Right. Now that's a very important thing that actually, like, what I think a lot of people miss is the whole sustainability aspect of it. So now that, I mean, you can always work out as much as you want, but there comes a time where it becomes a little too not that it becomes hard, but it's not fun anymore for you. You know what I mean? So when did you start using a lot of your nutritional, not to say background, but your nutritional knowledge to keep maintaining the weight loss?
I started after my knee surgery. I realized when I couldn't run anymore, oh man, weight's starting to come back on a little bit. That's when I had started going after my training certification, my nutrition certification, and learning more about that. I studied precision nutrition with Dr. John Berardi's course, and that gave a fantastic foundation. And once I started learning how the body worked and that there's different ways to lose weight, and when you lose weight, it's not always fat. Sometimes it's lean muscle tissue, which is a bad thing.
Right.
Which running, I lost a lot of lean muscle tissue too, which slows your metabolism in the long run. But once I started getting the pieces together, I definitely changed up my approach and came to a much healthier body. But that's an important thing to think about too, is all weight loss isn't good.
Right.
If you're burning through your lean muscle tissue because you're under eating and over exercising, that actually slows your metabolism. Lean muscle tissue is much more metabolically active than mm-hmm. fat is. So if you're burning that, over-exercising and taking the approach some people do, in the long run, as you get older, that's why we get this yo-yo effect. And it comes on, you get it off, then it's harder to get off the next time, and then it's even harder to get off the next time.
Yeah, so what do you say about, like you said, the yo-yo diets? What is your opinion about some of these, I would say, like, more common, like, diets that you have, like, for example, keto and paleo? Are you for or against, or is it just kind of based on the person and, whatever works for you the best?
You know, I think they're useful tools for the right person. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they're sustainable in the long run.
Okay.
But I still think they're useful. So if you're like morbidly obese and you're facing, you're about to be type 2 diabetic and having to go on medications and you're at high risk of heart disease, somebody that's like right on that cusp, mm-hmm. it might be beneficial for them to get fat adaptive very quickly and do something like keto with the understanding that that diet probably isn't going to be sustainable in the long run. I don't have any issues with that, especially if it's with doctor approval and we're looking at blood work.
Right.
But I don't think the average person should just randomly start keto and or adopt it as a permanent lifestyle. Right. For instance, if you have issues with your gallbladder and your body's not good at digesting fat, then keto is a terrible idea because mm-hmm. it's a 70% fat diet.
Right.
If you do full keto, I mean, there's different variations right. of it. You know, Mark Sisson and all those have different recommendations. But I think they could be useful tools. But in the long run, I want to find what's something you can live with for the rest of your life and continue to strive towards what your version of optimal health is.
Do you, during your journey, or have you kind of fallen off the wagon a little bit? Or is it okay to do that? I mean, not okay, but have you had experience with falling off the wagon?
Other than after the knee surgery, not really. The only other time, you know, my dad died in December. And life got very, very, very hectic, driving back and forth for the funeral, lots of time with family, lots of junk food around and things out of my control for an extended period of time. So about six to eight weeks. Mm-hmm. During those 6 to 8 weeks that's the only period where I really felt like I wasn't, you know, things weren't going the way they were supposed to. Mm-hmm. And I think there'll be seasons in everybody's life where that happens.
Right.
As long as you don't completely let go of everything you're doing, because I still worked out during that period, but I lost control of my food, partially, you know, between emotional stress and depression and family problems and all the travel. Because
right.
A lot of my clients travel for a living, mm-hmm. and it's possible to eat well on the go. But sometimes when that emotional part is there too, and there's so much stress and so much on your plate, it's difficult to navigate and make good decisions. So during that period in the last, you know, 10 years, that's probably the only time I feel like I really wasn't in control. Okay. And I do think everybody will have periods in their life like that. And I do think that's okay, as long as you don't stay there.
Now, can you talk to the listeners about, or to me, about the importance, what stress does to your body, like if not only mentally, but physically? I was listening to your podcast, and I remember you saying that there was a correlation between stress and not being able to lose weight itself. Am I correct or that, or no?
Absolutely. So when we experience stress without coping mechanisms, mm-hmm. you have an upregulation of norepinephrine and adrenaline. Those are catabolic hormones okay. that also break down muscle tissue to provide energy, which in the long run can slow your metabolism. The other thing it can do is it could really tax your adrenal system. Mm-hmm. And once the adrenal system gets taxed, your thyroid starts to slow down. And then we start seeing thyroid issues or metabolism issues due to that chronic stress. And then that upregulation of norepinephrine and adrenaline can start to impact your sleep.
Okay.
And once your sleep is impacted, all your hormones follow after. So, for instance, a perfectly healthy individual with perfect blood work, if he were to stay up all night, mm-hmm. the next day his blood work, his insulin would look like that of a type 2 diabetic because of that stress response. Blood pressure increases significantly as well. So arterial damage, heart disease can go up from even just emotional stress, which is really important. That slow drip all day long does make a chronic impact. That can lead to cardiac events and all kinds of problems, and certainly weight gain.
Right.
But also your amygdala gets cut off from your prefrontal cortex when you're lacking in sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So the prefrontal cortex is the more recent development that sets humans apart from any other species. That's why we're so smart. Mm-hmm. When we're no longer using the prefrontal cortex and we're just going from our primal brain and the amygdala, we're much more impulsive. It's a lot harder to say no to a cookie, for instance. We don't have impulse control when that line has been cut off, if they're not communicating together. So eating decisions go down the window. Other hormones get impacted by lack of sleep, such as ghrelin, our hunger hormone, will increase And leptin, the hormone that tells us we're full, goes down just from not getting good sleep.
Wow.
And all that could stem back to stress.
Right.
Yeah, I think everybody's spent nights with thoughts swirling in their head, not letting them go to bed. And that just has this crazy domino effect.
Right.
It goes even further. Then we get less vitamin D, less serotonin, which is the precursor to serotonin, which is the precursor to melatonin. And now you've impacted the next day's sleep. It's a crazy cycle.
It's a very crazy cycle. So how would you be able to combat that? I mean, is there no way around if you are have a lot of things that are worrying you? Is there no way around it for losing weight or?
Yeah, there's plenty of things you can do from a stress specific standpoint. You know, a lot of my clients, I have them look at sleep. In terms of finding your weakest area, side note, I did create a health evaluation that's free on my website, firewithinnf.com. That's NF as in nutrition and fitness. And it should be the first thing you see on the homepage. You can take a 56 question evaluation, and there's seven categories, and one of them is stress and sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So if you score really low in that category, that's the area of health you should focus on the first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you have a chance to do that?
Yes, I did. Oddly enough, one of the lowest ones was the stress and sleep and the sugar, which I do want to get into the sugar aspect of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I know that's a very, like I said, again, I listened to a lot of your episodes on your podcast, and sugar was definitely one of the things that you kind of talk about how, and I mean, everybody knows how addictive it is comparative to. What'd you say? I think you said that it's more addicting than crack cocaine at one point.
That's right. Yeah. When mice have the choice between cocaine or sugar, they pick sugar every time, and mice really like cocaine.
That's so crazy to think about, to be honest.
Yeah. It lights up the same portion of the brain when they do studies, and it's in some cases it's nine times of a stronger reaction. It is addictive. But to go back to your question so we don't leave the listeners hanging, things to combat stress at night, especially looking at sleep quality. You can dim your lights. I have a Himalayan sea salt rock lamp,
okay. Which
sounds super hippie, but it's a softer, warmer orange glow. The bright lights, white and blue wavelength spectrum from lights actually upregulate norepinephrine and adrenaline, our awake hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So at night, I make sure half an hour before bed, the only light source is that dimly lit or the Himalayan pink sea salt lamps. I brush my teeth in that light. I have one in the bathroom, and we have one on each nightstand. I think meditation apps.
Right.
I've been listening to, it's just rain sounds and like keyboard music.
Mm.
If I have a hard night's sleep. But the most effective tool I've found personally is taking an Epsom salt bath an hour before bed.
Okay.
And here's what's happening. There's two things going on. One, Epsom salt's main ingredient that's active is magnesium sulfate,
okay,
or sulfite. And that is absorbable through the skin, and magnesium relaxes your muscles.
Oh.
So we get a physical release. Now, on top of that, your body temperature is warmed up by the bath water. Your body has to thermoregulate. And when our body experiences a 4-degree temperature drop, we release melatonin.
Oh.
So when you get out of the bath and your body starts to rapidly cool, that's spurring on melatonin release,
mm-hmm,
quicker. That's why it helps babies go to sleep.
Right.
It works the same for adults.
Mm.
So not being exposed to blue light spectrums like from your phone, your computer screens, and your TVs a half hour before bed, switching to those softer glows, a cool temperature, utilizing that Epsom salt bath,
mm-hmm,
are some great strategies to help unwind your brain. And then deep breathing.
Mm-hmm.
The easiest tool I can give somebody for stress is called box breathing, which really bothers me because boxes have four sides, but box breathing only has three steps. So I don't know who named this damn thing. It should have been called triangle breathing. But you breathe in for four counts, try and fill up completely. You hold your breath for seven counts, and then you breathe out for eight counts.
Okay.
And the counts aren't all that important. I don't care what numbers you use. Use 6, 2, 7. I don't care. But with 4, 7, 8, because you're having to think about the structure, it interrupts your thought process.
Mm.
So you can stop those cyclical thoughts. On top of that, you're getting a lot of oxygen to the blood. When we're stressed and we're going about our day, we're doing very shallow chest breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, all of us have forward rounded shoulders because we're on keyboards and driving all day.
Mm-hmm.
So what that does is it compresses the diaphragm's ability to expand. So generally speaking, all day long, we're not getting enough oxygen, which guess what? That's a stressor, which increases norepinephrine and adrenaline, catabolic hormones that break down muscle tissue and interrupt sleep. So just getting intentional deep breaths is going to reoxygenate the bloodstream until and it instantly turns off fight or flight, instantly. And you're no longer in a breakdown state.
It's funny you mentioned that because I remember, I forget where I heard this, where, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard this before where if you do, like you said, intentional breathing, sometimes I heard this, it must have been in a podcast, and actually I think it was Joe Rogan's podcast.
Oh, yeah.
He had a specialist where he was saying that the breathing aspect of it, right? So a lot of people overbreathe but don't get enough oxygen because we're breathing so fast, I think. I believe I could be incorrect on that.
Yeah.
But if we do more intentional breathing where we regulate our breathing, we get more oxygen to our bloodstream, which essentially goes to our brain, obviously. You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, one caution, if you have 20 years of bad sleep habits, you're not going to do one cycle of deep breathing and take a bath and be able to sleep like a baby. It's going to take some time.
Right.
So a lot of my clients go, I did what you said. I plugged in the salt rock lamp and I couldn't sleep. It's not that easy. It takes time.
Only if it
wasn't. It takes consistency.
Okay. Yeah, I remember you changed right away. Just make little increment changes on in that aspect, you know, especially like sleeping, right?
Yeah.
So did you say like instead of like using your phone, turn it off like 10 minutes before, 15 minutes before, and then slowly incrementing it to like 30 minutes and 40 minutes and so on and so forth?
Yeah, something like that. Or with the light spectrum, you know, with the electronics, I may start with 30 minutes there. With the 15-minute increments, that's if you're trying to move your bedtime back earlier. Because most growth hormone is released between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m.
Okay.
So if you're awake during those hours, you're missing a lot of the benefits and restorative parts of sleep. From a circadian rhythm standpoint. So if there's no necessity for you to stay up late, it's just a habit, then it would be a good idea to every 3 days back up your bedtime by 15 minutes until it's as close to 10 p.m. as makes sense. Honestly, I go to bed between 10:30 and 11.
Okay.
That's fine. I'm not dogmatic about this, and everybody's a little different.
Yeah.
But if you go to bed at 1 a.m. and there's no need to do that, that's a problem.
Now, how many hours do you recommend that people sleep? Is that just the regular 8 hours or more or less? Whatever works for you?
Everybody's different. Mm-hmm. I think the sweet spot range is anywhere from six and a half hours to 10 hours is kind of the range for most.
Right.
Some people might get 8 hours and they feel extremely groggy and run down for the first half of their day, and that can perpetuate, and they may wake up after six and a half, they feel refreshed and ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, maybe it's okay to get six and a half, and they do very well on that.
Mm-hmm.
As long as it's deep quality, because the other thing is the quality of sleep. Just because you're in bed for 8 hours doesn't mean you're in REM sleep.
Right.
And everybody's cycles are different. You know, typically it's a 90-minute cycle, but some might be, you know, 76 minutes, and other people's might be 100-minute cycles. And that might be where some of the discrepancy comes through. But typically, we want at least 3 full sleep cycles as a minimum. And 5 is usually a better amount.
Okay.
Or more. So that would be, what does that put you at? 1.5, 3. So 7.5 hours is kind of generally where most people do okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it can differ from individual to individual.
Right. Yeah. Especially like, I know like my dad, he, you know, he sleeps like, if he could, he'd probably sleep like 5 hours and,
yeah.
He'd be good with 5 hours or whatever. Even so, my dad had a stroke, you know, a few years ago or almost 2 years ago now. And even now he still gets up sometimes like around, you know, like 6 a.m. and,
yeah.
Which he doesn't have anything to do, but that's just his regular routine now that, you know, it's kind of stuck with him.
Yeah, I mean, some people are fine with that. And then if you could utilize a power nap somewhere in the day, that's right. A good idea. Naps, I think, are best to do 30 minutes because you're just getting into that first of 3 parts of a cycle. So you're not going to wake up super, super groggy, but rather a little bit more refreshed.
Okay.
So I'm a big fan of 30-minute naps if you can get them in just for some extra restoration. But and then when you're trying to get more sleep, maybe you're somebody who just stays up all night, you're insomniac, and you've had issues for a long time. Still do the deep breathing even if you don't fall asleep because you're getting oxygen to the blood. You're changing your hormones.
Mm-hmm.
And over sustained periods of time, it could start to impact that actual sleep time. Because if you're laying down rested and your thoughts aren't racing,
mm-hmm.
you're still in a more restorative state than you otherwise would be.
Okay. Now, going back to the nutrition, do you what would you recommend cheat meals if you do recommend any cheat meals? Because I know that I'm assuming that you have to have like a balanced life, right? So you have to have, obviously you want to take care of yourself, but also you're still human, you know, and living, right. You know, being raised in a, especially a Western side of the world, you're, unfortunately, you have a lot of temptations out there, so.
Yeah, so everybody's going to be different there, too. I think it depends on what your goals are at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're trying to cut weight for a competition, you probably don't want to do any cheat meals.
Right.
If your goal is to find a sustainable plan and you're okay with it taking some time, I'll have 1 to 2 cheat meals a week. But I've been in maintenance mode for 8 years.
Okay. Yeah.
When I was trying to lose weight, it was very rare. It was pretty rare, mm-hmm. once a week or less. And the other thing to consider is your cheats now might look different than your cheats before if you're making habit changes.
Right.
So, for instance, a cheat for me might be having like a wheat grain or corn product, as opposed to, you know, having most of a pizza with garlic knots and crazy, you know, and Cinestecs. That's not really a part of my life ever. So maybe even upgrading to better cheats, could be a good starting point. But I think it just depends on where you want to get to. I don't think if you're following a diet that doesn't allow you to have cake on your birthday, I think that's a diet that's probably going to fail.
Right.
So it should be a realistic diet that allows some wiggle room. Something else I say a lot to my clients is I'm not looking for perfect. I'm looking for better.
Okay.
I don't think perfect exists. There's life happens, mm-hmm. things get in the way, and you just make the best decision with what you have in front of you. Because what happens is people go, well, I screwed up. I'll just screw up for the rest of the week and start again on Monday.
Right.
And then Monday gets around, they screw up again, and then they just give up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing for me at times, you know, especially if I'm doing really well, I try to get out of that mindset, but unfortunately, you know, I'm human. So if I mess up, for example, if I have like a good example, before I left work today, one of my coworkers gave me a little piece of chocolate, you know,
yeah.
And I try not to beat myself up, or whatever, just because I ate that little piece of chocolate, and it's just like, at times and that's the hardest part for me anyway, so.
Yeah, and I think things like that are fine. You know, special occasions, unless there's a ton of them, like you're in an office and every day it's somebody's birthday,
yeah.
Then you may want to be a little bit more choosy. But, you know, Mother's Day, I'll take my mom out, we get strawberry ice cream at the strawberry patch. I didn't really feel bad about that.
Right.
But I think allowing some and knowing where they are and when they are, I think it helps you stay on track,
right.
for the rest of the week. Like Monday through Thursday, I can eat great because I know on Friday I'm going to let loose a little.
Right.
Because I know it's coming, I don't feel deprived. I put it off to have something later. And then if there are, like occasionally my clients bring me things.
Oh, really?
Like every, you know, on Christmas, one of my clients always delivers a pumpkin pie with a bourbon whipped frosting thing. It's,
wow.
amazing.
Really good.
I'm not going to throw that out. That's crazy. Now, what I will do and what I am known for, if I want a piece of cake or something, I'll throw the rest of the cake out. I will do that.
Oh, really?
Okay. I'll throw a whole cake out. I won't feel bad about it. But So if I have a get together or something, and somebody leaves a cake or something, I'll have a slice and then I'll get rid of the rest.
You know, I kind of done that myself, to be honest. Like not a cake, but I have, like, for example, especially if I'm going, like, my preference and is the keto diet, just because I'm a type 2 diabetic, so I think that helps me with my insulin or my sugar, I would say. Just regulating my sugar levels. If I order like some Chinese food and if I'm kind of treating myself a little bit, most likely I'll probably throw away the rice or something, you know, I'm just like, and I feel kind of bad, but I'll, you know, I'd rather just throw it away and just get it out of the way and not have that temptation. So.
Yeah. I try real hard not to take home leftovers.
Right.
And if I, you know, if I have dinner with friends or Bible study or whatever, mm-hmm. I don't take, if I bring something that's a cheat, I don't bring it back what the leftovers
okay.
are. So I enjoy it for that day and that's it.
So it's okay to throw away food, people.
I think it is, because if there's no nutritive value to it, then I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Especially if it's something that actually harms your health. But everybody's going to be different. You know, if your grandparents grew up in the Great Depression, they're probably going to have a different theory on that.
Yeah, for sure.
But for me, I don't have any moral conflict with it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I was going to say is understanding your limitations will help guide that. For me, I know I can't go to a buffet. Right. If I go to a buffet, I'm going to have like 5 or 6 plates. Mm-hmm. Every time I go, I get one of everything to see what I like. I go back for what I liked. Then you got to go back for like the soups and desserts. And then I go back for what I like the most. And then, God forbid, there's a chocolate fountain, you know. So I know that that's a limitation I have, so I don't go to buffets because I don't have I'm still the same person I was 20 years ago. That person's still in there. Those tendencies are still there. So I just don't put myself in that situation.
Right. So just a little backtrack. What would you say the biggest difference between you at 244 or even higher, if you did go higher, just in case, to now, like what confidence wise, you know, obviously the more obvious, which is like clothes, obviously fitting a little bit better. What would you say would be the biggest benefits of being, you know, healthy in a sense, you know?
Yeah, you actually just said it, confidence. That's the number one thing. Mm-hmm. When I was overweight, I didn't like the way I looked. So, of course, that would make dating hard. It would make meeting new people and meet new friends hard because you're always thinking about how you look and how you're perceived. Being invited to eat with somebody was always like really nerve-wracking. You know, I don't want to look like a slob. Right. But I think the biggest thing is confidence. Okay. And then second would just be energy and motivation to do things. Mm-hmm. I was in insomniac periods of college where I wouldn't leave the house. We'd plan on going to the gym and we really wanted to go to the gym, but then we'd eat another bad meal, have that food coma, mm-hmm. and we'd take a nap at like 7 p.m., take a nap, wow. Fall asleep till like 10, wake up, watch Netflix for an hour, mm-hmm. and then go back to bed, and we missed that gym time because right. our body was in comatose from the influx of sugar.
Right.
So that doesn't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. At least if I miss a workout, that's not why.
Right. So going back to the big question, I guess, I'm pretty sure I kind of know the answer, but what is more important, obviously, nutrition or is it working out?
I think it's nutrition. I think it's about 80% of the equation.
80% of the equation? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, working out helps. It's good. It helps with hormones. It helps with taking up glycogen and getting sugar out of the body. It helps with muscle development, which speeds up your metabolism. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you can do both, even better. Right. But if you're going to focus on one thing, I think it would be the nutrition.
Yeah. So right before the pandemic started, I was doing so well with, you know, like, you know, working out. And then I was eating really good. I mean, I was on the keto. And, well, I don't say keto. I'll say low carb because keto was an extreme to me. It is an extreme to me. So low carb to me was what I would do, right? I was do like a super low carb, but and I got to my healthiest, you know, my healthiest weight, and then the pandemic hit, unfortunately. And then that's kind of where I think that's kind of where I want to know about the stress level, because like I was so stressed out because of the whole pandemic, and it was so, especially in the beginning, it was so scary for me. Just because, not necessarily just for me, but just, you know, I talked about it before in different podcasts, like bringing it home to my parents. I live with my brother, but I go to my parents often just because, like I said, my dad had a stroke and I was so stressful that I slowly began eating things that I probably shouldn't have ate.
Yeah. I think the more idle time we have, the more mindless eating there is, just because we're bored. Mm-hmm. And because we're less active and you know, I think takeout went a lot. People were ordering Grubhub and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. It was just like massive amounts with less activity to boot. So I think,
they close the gyms too. So,
right, exactly. With everything being shut down. So what I would have people do during the pandemic is every time they go to the fridge, ask themselves, are they hungry or are they bored? and kind of think through that. And other strategies to help with that is making sure you're well hydrated, because thirst is typically confused for hunger by the body.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of times when we think we're hungry, we probably just need a glass of water.
Okay. That's a good little tip. So talk to us about your website and how, or your nutrition service that you offer, and how that you came across or how you developed it and what you offer.
Yeah. So I do one-on-one, either personal training here in person or through Zoom, or nutrition coaching. Okay. And the way that works is we do an initial consult where we have to go through a full intake of what a typical day is like. I have you fill out a form through the website, and we discuss that, come up with an overall plan. And then every week we just meet for a half hour, discuss which habit we're going to attack, and we start stacking those habits one at a time each week with a different focus. And we could troubleshoot if something didn't go well or if it did go well. And then my methodology comes from, I've worked with over 3,000 people over the last 10 years.
That's a lot of people.
I was the nutrition department head at Lifetime Fitness in Cary. We had 11,000 members. I did that for a number of years, also led the blood work department. So I was able to see from blood work what habit changes and what things actually made a difference to hormones.
Okay.
And I keep all those things in mind with my approach. And then on the website, I'm really excited about this. This was several years in the making. I have a complete nutrition course that's taken online at your own pace. Mm-hmm. It starts with that assessment we talked about at the beginning. So you could find, you know, what are the areas you need to work on the most. And then there's 9 modules there, and they very in-depthly go into what's going on hormonally, with what foods, what to eat, what not to eat, and why. What types of habit changes can you do to impact hormones, such as increasing vitamin D by getting more sunlight in the morning, which actually helps with serotonin or feel-good hormones. Right. So that's going to help with anxiety and depression. We go over microbiome health, but all the different aspects of health in very in-depth way. But I developed a questionnaire based on those 3,000 clients I had. Mm-hmm. What were the things that seemed to make the biggest difference? And that's what comprises that evaluation.
Now, what would you say the biggest difference, I'm not trying to push back or anything like that, I just, what was the biggest difference between you and another trainer, I guess a nutritionist coach?
There's a couple of things. You know, one, I think because I've been on both ends of the health spectrum, right. I'm not just an athlete that's been fit my whole life. I think I have a lot more empathy and understanding. Mm-hmm. And I have a better idea of what actual habit change that's sustainable looks like. That, I think I've done an absurd amount of research that most trainers don't do. Hundreds of medical journals, books, seminars. I've flown to hear doctors talk and work with them, work in tandem with that. My experience with the blood work department, the network of dietitians I talk with and work with, holistic doctors, functional doctors, physical therapists, to find things that actually make a difference for people. Right. Nothing's cookie cutter. I don't have just a templated program that I do with everybody. Right. No two people's program looks the same.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I really kind of stuck out at me a little bit, as far as like if I was to get a personal trainer, nutritional coach, the fact that you were heavy at one point, and I think you can assimilate to my story. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's a big. It's a big factor, you know what I mean? Because not only that, not only do you know where I'm at, but there's also a little bit less judgment, I guess. And I'm not saying that other personal trainers are judgmental, but I feel like, especially if they've been pretty healthy their whole lives and you know, they know what they're doing for sure, but they don't know where I'm coming from either. So,
right, exactly.
So what do you have for the listeners? I know we were talking behind the scenes, and I know you had a little bit of a little thing for my listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm about to do a larger scale launch. I soft launched. I'm about to do a large launch of my nutrition program, the online nutrition program, transformation course. So any of the listeners on your show can use the promo code SMIT. SMIT, Mind Intoxicated Tongue, all caps at checkout. You'll get an additional $10 off even the launch price, because the launch price is already discounted. Okay. But it'll give them an additional discount. And that'll give you full access to the entire course, not just the freebies. And if you're not sure if you want to purchase it, you can still take the evaluation at no cost. And there's also a free course on foundational supplements that may be helpful and what to look out for, with recommendations as well. Both of those are free.
Yeah,
you just have to create a username and log in.
Yeah, I actually did watch that video, the supplement, and it's kind of interesting. Can you talk a little bit about the supplements? Because I know a lot of people, or I don't say a lot of people, some people that I know and start getting into this whole you know, fitness world. They're still heavier, but then they want to get fit. right away they kind of want to jump on the supplements. And I guess I've never been a supplement type of person. Can you talk a little bit on that?
Yeah. So first off, the supplement industry is not regulated by the FDA, and there's a lot of junk out there. A lot of, I'd say 90% of what's out there is nonsense. Oh, wow. But if you have properly sourced supplements, they can make a big difference. One of the benefits about starting a plan with them is it's one of the easiest habits you can start. Mm-hmm. It takes far less motivation to take a capsule than to drag yourself to the gym. Mm-hmm. And typically, if we spend the money on the supplements, we're putting that in our body, it will influence other habits.
Okay.
So I think for some people, it can be a good way to start. And there's a couple supplements that I think make the biggest difference. If you are going to take a high-quality multivitamin, that free supplement course will go in detail what to look for. But I'm looking for chelated minerals, not oxides. I'm looking for B12 to be methylated, and I'm looking for folate, acetic folic acid, and I'm looking at the capsules to make sure there's not a bunch of garbage. And there's a full list of what to avoid on the website. Mm-hmm. On top of multi, I think fish oil is tremendously beneficial to help with weight loss. Studies have shown 3 grams of fish oil a day can help you burn up to 200 more calories a day without lifting a finger. I usually recommend 6 grams a day to most people. Feel free to check with your doctor. But that could be a game changer for people, make a big difference. In addition to lubricating joints, helping with cognitive function because their brains are mostly made up of fat. And if you're worried about fish burps, you can buy the double-coated ones and you can freeze them. If you take them frozen, they'll get further down the digestive tract before releasing, and that'll help as well.
That's smart. Because I had the garlic ones before, and those and the fish ones are, you get do burp, it does not taste very good.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't typically have any issues, especially if I freeze them, especially if it's the burpless or double coated. Mm-hmm. And then I think L-glutamine is really helpful for a lot of people. That's an amino acid we produce on our own, but you can get it in powder form. It helps heal the lining of the small intestines. Most people have some form of leaky gut, which is where proteins from wheat grain, corn, and dairy penetrate the lining of the small intestines, cause inflammation and faster fat gain and things like that. So L-glutamine will heal that. It also strengthens your immune system, which is great during a pandemic. And it also lessens the length of time you're going to be sore after a workout and to the degree you're sore. Okay. So I think L-glutamine is important. Magnesium is extremely important and even helps with blood sugar regulation. So that's a supplement I strongly recommend. And I think that's the main ones. We talked about the multi fish oil, L-glutamine, magnesium. And then protein powder. If you do a protein powder, I prefer either plant-based or collagen. I don't do whey or dairy sources. Some people do okay on it, but a lot of people don't. It can cause more intestinal issues. It can cause cystic acne for some. Lots of bloating for many people. So I would advise a plant-based protein powder or a collagen-based protein powder.
I gotcha.
Yep.
So if for listeners, if you would tell the listeners, or if you had one thing you can tell listeners who are starting or want to start on their journey, what would that be?
Yeah, I would tell them that because of a field of science called epigenetics, which has to do with the protein coding on your genes, it actually responds to the environment it's in. So regardless of who your family is, where you come from, your past experience, you are in control of where you ultimately end up. You can change those things. Just because diabetes runs in your family or Alzheimer's runs in your family, it doesn't have to come true for you.
Right.
But if you do the habits that cause that gene to express itself, then yes, you'll be more likely to have it. Because people give up all the time. They go, well, it just runs in my family, so yeah, I'm going to have it. But everybody's in, you can change your legacy. You can. It does take discipline. It does take sustainable changes over the long term. I think working with a coach could be very helpful. Right. But the biggest thing I would say is you can make that change. Another really cool fact is scientists think about every 7 years, every cell in your body turns over.
Oh, wow.
That's why people are able to overcome chronic illnesses. Mm. Quote unquote chronic.
Right.
So if you consistently for weeks, months, and years do the right thing and put the right things in your body, it's amazing how resilient the body is and what it can do.
Right. That's great advice. I mean, I especially coming from a family that has a lot of health issues. That's really good advice, because I can't just say like, yeah, I'm type 2 diabetic, or my dad had a stroke, now I'm gonna have a stroke. My grandpa died from a heart attack, and my dad had a heart attack as well. So I probably, definitely good advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, thank you, Brandon, so much. Do you have anything else? Go ahead and plug in your social media and your website if you want.
Yeah, if you want to learn more about me, check me out on firewithinnf.com. And then my Gmail account, firewithinnf@gmail.com. You can contact me directly. My personal cell is on the website too. So if you have any questions, if you want to set up a consultation, I'd love to do that. And definitely check out the course, check out the freebies. And if you want the full in-depth course, use that promo code SMIT, S-M-I-T.
Right, that's Brandon for you guys. Thank you so much for listening to another episode.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Sober Mind, Intoxicated Tongue podcast. Please be sure to take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. We really appreciate that effort. And we'll catch you in the next episode of Sober Mind, Intoxicated Tongue.